Hi, I'm Eve Fairbanks, an associate editor at The New Republic.
And I'm Matthew Continetti of The Weekly Standard. And,
hi, Matt.
Hello, Eve. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing? Happy Super Bowl.
I'm fine. I'm here from Blogging Head's headquarters in Lower Manhattan.
Oh, great.
It's thrilling to be here.
The mothership.
The mothership. Get a behind-the-scenes look at how the firm is run. And, of course, it's great to be in New York City.
I'll bet.
It's no place like it. But before we begin, though, what was your take on the Super Bowl?
you know...
Did you watch the Super Bowl?
I did watch it. I left, like, in the middle of the fourth quarter, assuming it was over, and was driving home and on the radio, so I chose the wrong Super Bowl to leave. I will say, though, that I am not a huge football fan. I'm not really, like, a sports fan, period, or a team sports fan. And it's funny because there's such a demand that one be a fan. Like, whenever I go to a Super Bowl party, this has happened a couple times, including last night, there's this kind of, like, oh, well, who are you rooting for? And if I say, well, I have no idea who the hell's playing, I have no allegiance to any of these cities, they say, well, you have to pick someone, you know? But for me, it's like every time there's a great play, I kind of enjoy it for just watching, you know, people, football players being successful and doing something thrilling and successful in their chosen field. And so whenever there's a touchdown on either side, I kind of throw up my hands and I'm very excited. And people make fun of this as a very pathetically girly response to football, because it's like, how can you not be on one side or the other? So how about you?
Well, I'm a huge NFL fan, so I love the game. I thought it was a very good game. But, you know, what struck me about Charles Cradimer wrote a column way back. It's in his collection, Cutting Edges, which is out of print, and I had to go to the Strand to find it years ago. But he had a column there, one of the first for the Washington Post, where he was talking about, you know, baseball is really the American, the Republican American, that's small r, Republican sport. It's democratic. It's slow-paced. There's an equality among the players. And then if you look at the NFL and the football, professional football, it really is America as the imperium. And there's no event that kind of demonstrate this thesis to me quite like the Super Bowl, where you have, you know, the huge crowds, the endless fireworks, the spectacle, so evocative of ancient Rome, imperial Rome. And then especially last night's game, with the images of military power, with David Petraeus, of all people, there to flip the coin, and getting a huge response from the audience when his name was announced. It really was amazing. And then, of course, the flyover. This thing that greets every single football game of major import is the flyover, this demonstration of American military power. It is amazing that this is the greatest, it's the most popular sport in America, and it's also the most imperial. So, you know, the little neocon in me is always slightly cheered when I see this. Though it's not necessarily, I mean, there, I should state, I mean, it's not necessarily all a good thing, I think. I'm not even sure it's a good thing, period.
Somebody turned to me at my party, which was a very docile party of, like, liberal bloggers, Ezra Klein, and everyone was kind of typing away, blogging about the stimulus while half watching the Super Bowl. It was a weird experience, but someone turned to me.
That sounds really fun, yeah.
Yeah, it was fun in its way, but someone, everyone has their different definition of fun, you know.
That's true.
You know, when they were having those explosions, these kind of ejections of fireworks, it is very kind of Roman, gladiatorial, the spectacle. And somebody turned to me and said, you know, should we really be doing this right now in with this kind of economic downturn and the average person, you know, Florida home foreclosures are shooting through the roof and yet we're spending however bajillion on these, like, fireworks. I don't know that the two seem. I think in times of kind of civic depression, people look to those kinds of events not to be scaled back. But
absolutely, bread and circuses. But we did see how the economic downturn affected the commercials. My favorite being the Cash for Gold commercial, where Ed McMahon is stating, you know, gold is at an all-time high, and I'm going to sell all these things to CashForGold.com and get money for it. It seems to me it's a total scam that they're probably giving you money at far less the value that they're going to sell the gold for, or whatever it is. And the best line was MC Hammer, who was also in the commercial. I don't know if you saw it, saying that he can sell his gold pants that he used to wear. But it was good to see that he was looking good there. And of course, Ed McMahon seemed to be doing well, too. But you mentioned the stimulus. And so that's the topic on everyone's mind. Never has the word stimulus been uttered so much. I mean, it's kind of an ugly word.
Not screened by the FCC, right?
Yeah, I know, exactly. Well, just give it time. There may be a fine attached to it one day, depending on the outcome. But it is kind of an ugly word, but it's come to mean, to me anyway, so many different things to different people. I mean, you can follow The Economist. There's such a great debate going on now between people like Paul Krugman on his blog, and Tyler Cowen at Marginal Revolution, and then Greg Mankiw at Harvard has his own blog now. And they're all going back and forth and debating the actual economics of the stimulus. You know, what is the multiplier effect for every dollar spent by the federal government? You know, or is this temporary? What's better, long-term or temporary? These sorts of things. But then, so that's the economic debate, which is real and interesting and important. But then there's the political debate, which is what you and I follow, and which is taking place in D.C., and it seems to me that the two are completely divorced, that what we're happening is, because of the way that the Democrats in the House designed the economic recovery plan, the political debate is taking precedence over the economic debate that we should be having.
You blame it on the Democrats in the House.
Well, I blame everything on the Democrats in the House. So
not the zero votes that Republicans amassed. You know, to me, they just seem like they're just taking pleasure and sort of developing an esprit de corps of this massive resistance without... and it's not very attractive to me. I mean, defend these people to me, seriously. And there's this idea that, the House Republicans are whatever they are. They're in this zone where they're very into the pride of resisting Obama and of making this great stand for fiscal discipline and budget hawkery, et cetera. But in the Senate, you've got some more sort of differences along the spectrum, and there'll be Republicans who vote with the Democrats, which I think is true to some extent. But I heard... John Kyle on the morning shows yesterday, I forget what show he was on, but he fired kind of a warning shot that reminded me of some of the warnings that were given before the first TARP bailout in late September failed, surprisingly, to everyone's shock,
right.
Which was, so he said, you know, I think, what did he say exactly? He had not started counting votes yet, but I see that support for this legislation is eroding, dun dun dun. So, I mean... In terms of, obviously, the Republicans think that they are, that there's something to gain by sort of complaining about the process and creating this divide between Pelosi and Obama. So saying, well, Obama, you know, he's trying to do the right thing, but these evil Pelosi, et cetera, are preventing him, which I think is like a ridiculous distortion of what's really going on. Obviously, there's a lot of discussion and cooperation between the executive top-level Democrats and the legislative. It's trying to kind of center the demon on Nancy Pelosi. And, you know, it was funny, writing you an email about just a little bit about the stimulus last night, I was using Gmail. And, you know, at the top of Gmail, it gives you, like, based on the content of your email, a suggestion.
Right.
For maybe a website. And it suggested the website of Representative Connie Mack, a Republican of Florida. And it said, conniemack.com: less spending, less taxing, less government, more freedom.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, to me, the Republican stand in the House on this stimulus bill kind of, they appear to have this very kind of abstract, almost corny, like, Daniel Boone throwback, you know, Americans want less government. They don't want this kind of spending in any respect. You know, they're for freedom. They're for less government. Kind of vision of the American public that seems, I mean, tell me this man's website is not moronic. it reminds me, I'll just say last thing, and then you have to sort of defend these people for me. But they remind me a little bit in the lessons that they've learned from their double defeats, and now, obviously, this, you know, the lesson that they've learned is to kind of stand together behind these core principles of less government, less spending, and kind of represent themselves as very much in opposition to the Democrats and not really right. work with the Democrats. And it reminds me a little bit of the guy who gets dumped, and he's hurt, and so he comes to tell himself that the reason that his woman dumped him is because she must be a lesbian. So she likes no men. And this is kind of the attitude, like, well, you know, the voters got rid of us, and they didn't like Medicare Part D, and they didn't like the spending that we did. They didn't like Bush's big spending. So because they didn't like the way we run government, they're right. anti-government. They don't like right. any government. They don't like any spending, you know. And I just... do see this as a little bit suicidal.
Seems like it's frustrating you. Yeah. You see, you don't understand these Republicans. So let me explain what they're doing. I'm not going to defend them because I actually disagree with though, a lot of them.
Okay.
I will say this, though. I think you're right to point out that the GOP is winning the intellectual argument against the stimulus. That's not because the idea of economic stimulus is somehow flawed in this time. We're living in a pretty bad economic times. I would say, actually, that the systemic problems with our banking system are kind of more pressing and important than the kind of decline in economic growth that, you know, it's they call it a business cycle for a reason. But the two problems are linked, and so it's entirely appropriate to try to solve both at once, and there's nothing wrong.
Right.
Most economists agree, even conservative economists like Marty Feldstein agree that, you know, we could use a fiscal boost, especially now that interest rates are more or less at zero.
Yeah, he wrote, I saw that article in the Post, talking
right.
about the fallacy that cutting taxes is always the right thing to do.
That's right, and I'm sympathetic to that. I don't think, now this is why I think that the Republicans are winning the political argument, as I discussed, over the stimulus, and that's because the stimulus is horribly designed. I mean, it's you look at it, it's a clunker, in my opinion, and I'll tell you why. One, I don't think it's big enough. I think if you talk to the serious people, we have a huge gap, an output gap, really, that needs to be covered. And the direct spending in this bill is insignificant compared to the gap that we're going to have over the next 2 years during this recession. The second reason I think it's poorly designed is these tax cuts. There's no evidence in either 2001 or 2008 that these sorts of tax rebates have any effect. Now, they may do it slightly differently this time, and that is give us the money, the taxpayers the money, even non-income taxpayers the money, through a change in withholding. And maybe that will have a slightly more, you know, stimulative effect because, you know, it's not like you just cash the check or sign the check over, you know, to your credit card company, which is what a lot of people do. They just save the money or use it to pay down personal debt. But in both 2001 and 2008, not much effect. But they're going to do it again because... why not? It's a campaign promise from President Obama. And then the third reason is that the money that is spent isn't spent quickly enough, and it's spent largely on things that are kind of debatable, right? I don't think there's much debate on either the Republican or the Democratic side that there would be no problem with increased infrastructure spending on the part of the federal government. People drive. Most Americans drive. Most Americans spend hours upon hours stuck in traffic. Why not build more roads? Why not build more highways, bridges, repair the ones we already have? Driving around in New York this weekend, obviously, New York could use some money to fill in these potholes. But so much of the money in this stimulus package is actually, there's some infrastructure spending, obviously, but so much of it is just to implement the Democratic domestic agenda that has been bottled up for the past, you know, 8 years. And the Democrats would totally reasonably expect, oh, why not use this opportunity to push through a lot of the things that we've been wanting?
Well, sure, and they should. But you haven't explained to me why Republicans are winning this intellectual or even the non-intellectual, the public PR debate. I mean...
Right.
For, you know, the bill's going to change in the Senate. It's going in, debate is starting today. They've said that they're going to allow some Republican amendments and a real, or at least for them to come up for a vote and some real debate on that. I know that they're thinking of, you know, ways to make sure, mandates to make sure that the money is spent right away. And, you know, that CBO report that everyone was going around squawking like a chicken about actually did show that there was a pretty good likelihood that something like 60%, 65%, it was almost up to the 75% level that they had wanted to be at, would be spent within something like the next 18 months. I'm not totally sure about that.
Most of that money, though, most of that figure comes from the tax cut, which, it will be spent, clearly,
but in terms
quickly,
of winning,
but it won't have much of an effect, I think.
Well, some of that tax stuff, I think, was put in. People say, oh, Obama wanted to win over Republicans on that. I really think it was aimed at conservative-minded Democrats. I mean, those are the people in the House in particular that he has to keep on board. But in terms of the intellectual argument, I read today that the House Republicans had their retreat end of last week in some Hot Springs, Virginia, I think. Sounded nice.
I think it was at the Greenbrier, yeah.
Take a little spa, soak your skin, you know. But they had an kind of pep rally where they showed a video that showed somebody, maybe it was the official House vote counter, or I'm not exactly sure who, but announcing that zero Republicans had voted for this stimulus. And a great cheer went up in the crowd. It's so happy that, you know, we stuck it to them and we screwed Obama. Haha. I don't know. To me, that that's a childish moment.
I don't understand why this is so emotional. I mean, what I'm hearing from you, I hear from Gene Robinson in his column on Friday. It's the same thing from a lot of writers. But what I don't understand is this. You have every right to vote your conscience.
Sure.
And I think the Republicans and a few Democrats, more than a few in the Senate, it seems, the red state Democrats in particular, just think this is a bad bill. Well, if think it's a bad bill, there's no reason that you should vote for it, especially considering your vote has no effect. I mean, the bill's going to be passed regardless. I mean, they may make changes as a result of, especially people like Nelson and Landrieu and such. You know, if they start having problems, the red state Democrats in the Senate, then there might be more changes to it. But I just don't understand why liberals, or maybe you can explain it to me, why liberals are so angry that the House Republicans voted against this bill, because the bill's still being passed. The House Republicans have real, I think, substantive objections to the way that this bill is being designed. I think they're drawing, I think you're right, they're drawing the absolutely wrong ideological lesson from this, and I've written on this in the past, that the lesson of the past 8 years is not that the voters are tired of big government, it's that they're tired of, you know, what they see as incompetently run government that doesn't help them in any way. But I think politically it makes sense for the House Republicans, and I would hypothesize that one of the reasons Democrats and liberals are so angry at them for voting unanimously against this bill is that they're not providing the Democrats any bipartisan cover.
I'm angry. I'm very angry.
It's funny, actually.
I remember our first dialogue, which was my maiden blogging heads, you made this argument that there would be no more anger in the age of Obama. It was a pox Obama. Remember, people would... Liberals wouldn't be angry. Anyway, you poor, sorry.
What's it with those liberals?
It's a shock, man. It's a shock to the system. I'm sorry. We're still angry. We're still angry lefties. I mean, I'm not angry. Look, the way that the Republicans, the House Republicans, are publicizing their vote, they're not publicizing it as a sort of somber, everyone putting out their own press release. Here's why I voted against it. It was a vote of conscience. They are publicizing it as a... They're publicizing the number zero as like, look, we took this group stand. We're very excited about this group total unity and the unity in the resistance of the Republicans. And, you know, insofar as they're publicizing it like that, when you think of Boehner or the way that Eric Cantor is speaking about this vote, I think that is childish and that they're obviously taking a certain pride in the kind of Masada-like totality of their resistance. They sound like the French underground. They're very kind of prideful about this. And secondly, I would just say, look, to me, the whole kind of brouhaha or flap over the contraception element Remember that, like,
oh, yeah.
thing? And liberals are very angry about that. Some of us were angry because, you know, people felt like there's an oblique way in which contraceptives, obviously, if women aren't getting pregnant when they don't want to get pregnant, et cetera, they can be better members of the workforce, had to do with jobs. Anyway, it was part of the Democratic, it was something they wanted to pass. It got removed. I thought that was, and the way that the Republicans kind of publicized that and publicized that element, put that out there, it made people angry because it sounded, you know, people felt like that was something that they were picking on, that was sort of trivial, in a way it was, but it was also a useful function of a minority, I think, was to bring attention to parts of this bill created by the Democrats that conservative Democrats might not have really read carefully or noticed, or and they're drawing attention to it, and then conservative Democrats, these blue dogs, can say, figure out whether or not they're swayed and say, oh, maybe from a conservative perspective that is an objection to the bill, I'm swayed by it. So I kind of liked what they did on that. But look, they lost an opportunity. Like, they had this vote. They kind of rallied and hurrahed against it, but they've got a Democratic executive now and a Democratic legislature, and I just think this sort of instant whining about being left out by Pelosi, and they Pelosi, you know, they're hurt because Obama didn't personally call them or whatever and get them in. They, you know, they had opportunities to bring up more things like that and say, look, a stimulus is going to happen. We realize that the Republican Study Committee's alternative is ridiculous because the country's controlled by Democrats, and it's something like that is never going to pass. But so, you know, they had opportunities to make this a better bill, and instead they had this kind of pep rally against the whole thing, as opposed to kind of going at it on more of its elements and trying to just introduce what conservative elements they could to it. And I just think they got into this like esprit de corps mode of being against it and having a sort of vanity of opposing Obama that that is just childish. It's moronic.
Well, I disagree with you. I just think there's every reason
fair enough
substantively to vote against this bill, and I don't think that the House Republicans were necessarily voting against Obama. You know, I did talk about the Pax Obama the last time we were talking, and I think it's in effect, actually.
Huh.
I think Obama has been great on this, and getting a lot of criticism from the left, actually, and reaching out to the Republicans, having them over, talking to them. And the Republicans, I think, the ones that I've seen, when they oppose this bill, they say, actually, we want the president to succeed. We want the economy to get back together. He's our president. But look, we can't support this bill. Now, the reasons they can't support it may be different from the reasons I don't support it. But nonetheless, they're all reasons. And if they don't support it, I think that's fine. I think what you're having instead is kind of a deflection, and that the real partisan battles are going to be between, you know, the parties in Congress. That you won't see. Obama is weird in a way because he's kind of separated not only from the Republicans, but also his own party. He's kind of aloof. And I guess maybe we'll spend a few minutes right now talking about him and his first week or so, almost 2 weeks in office. And it seems to me that aloofness is both a very attractive quality because he is an iconic figure in American life. Everybody likes him. He's enjoying a high approval rating. And that among Republicans, too. There are plenty of Republicans who like him. I'm one of them. Though I disagree
That's
with
cute.
Him on a lot of things. But I think that aloofness is also causing him a lot of trouble. And I think one reason that the stimulus is hitting up against some, what I think is going to be a big Senate battle, is because Obama let Congress take the lead. And I think every president will discover this, especially if, I know Bush discovered it, talking to people who worked in the Bush White House, they told me exactly this thing, which is that when you're the president and the Congress is controlled by your party, you have this, I guess, this partisan instinct that they're on your side. They're not on your side. We have three separate and co-equal branches of government, and they each have their own prerogatives and interests. They each have their own goals, and especially when you deal with the huge committee that is the United States Congress, you're dealing with hundreds of different agendas and different goals. That's why we have the executive, in order to impose order on this chaos that is our legislature. And I think Obama, since he is a legislator, that's his background, he doesn't have executive experience until now. He says he's almost 2 weeks of it. He kind of let his fellow legislators take the lead. And I think that's caused some real problems for him. How would you evaluate Obama's first 2 weeks?
Well, I don't totally know where you're coming from on that, because I think of, for example, this episode with the Blue Dogs. So last week, the Blue Dog Democrats, these red state conservative fiscal hawk Democrats, they started making noises like they might not support the stimulus bill. As you said, there's legit reasons not to support that House version of the stimulus bill.
Right.
And Obama just, you know, they do... But they also, you know, they don't really want to go against Obama. They're somewhat, they feel like they're part of a change movement as well in some of these red districts that elected them to bring change. And I think Obama's, you know, he's obviously a seductive figure. And you just saw, you know, this sort of mounting resistance among the Blue Dogs. And then Obama had Peter Orszag, the head of the OMB, send mm-hmm. them this very funny letter that was like, I promise you that sometime in the future we will return to fiscal discipline. It was not, you know, it was no kind of binding promise. It was just like, basically, I'm still thinking about you dudes, sort of. And they were just totally suckered by this letter. And they all, like, you know, there was Democratic resistance to that stimulus and Democrats who voted against it, but not nearly as many Blue Dogs as I would have expected to, mm-hmm. to oppose that stimulus bill. So, and you know, I also think of, I know that Pelosi et al. Didn't want to take out that contraceptive provision. And you know, Obama put some pressure on her and it got taken out. So I don't perceive him as weak, as being weak at all vis-a-vis Democrats. I'm interested in your view of him vis-a-vis Republicans. I mean, I would just say, as to your last point before we started talking about Obama, and then I'll link it in, but, you know, this idea that every Republican really wants him to succeed, nobody wants him to fail, I wish that were true. You know, there is such a partisan atmosphere right now. I think that statement is a little bit naive. You know, there's obviously this flap over Rush Limbaugh saying he's very proud of the fact that he feels Obama fears him. He's crowing about this. And he said, I hope that the president fails.
Right.
And then Eric Cantor, the GOP House whip, was asked about this by Andrea Mitchell, I believe. And he, you know, do you also hope the president will fail? Said, like Rush. And he didn't give an answer, you know. And he spun like a top, as Frank Rich put it in his column. And the answer, if you're a patriot, has to be in this time of emergency. And I thought Frank Rich's column on, it was called like Hoover Time or something inflammatory like that, as is Frank Rich's want, but was good on this. You know, the Republicans are acting as though the perfect is not the enemy of the good, that they have all the time in the world, that, you know, they can oppose whatever until it kind of achieves perfection, and that, you know, they have the luxury of potentially just opposing the president kind of
right.
indefinitely and not necessarily wanting him to succeed. If you are, you have to want him not to fail, you know. But I would say, and it's interesting because obviously one of the selling points of his candidacy and that he always put out there was that he would be able to respect and reach out to and win over Republicans in part by appealing to their sense of pride or respect, you know, kind of talking to them like they're real human beings as opposed to lizards or whatever we get here up on the hill of just oppositional, where everyone thinks that people on the other side are morons. And so he's been going and talking to the House Republicans. You know, he had this publicized meeting with them. I think he's going to talk to the Senate Republicans. He had this cocktail party last week where John Boehner and Thaddeus McCotter of Michigan, Republican, came over and schmoozed and whatever. And, you know, on the one hand, I think, of course, this has a use because it's like the principle of having dialogue with Iran or something. You know, you just kind of let them know that you respect them in some way and that you aren't just totally oppositional. On the other hand, it seems to have yielded no fruit at all, and it doesn't seem to have healed any of the partisan kind of angst and anguish and rift that you see up on Capitol Hill. You know, it astonishes me still that the Blue Dogs, they haven't yet kind of shown more sympathy with or affinity to the Republicans, because a lot of these guys won in districts that McCain ran extremely well in. They have more in common with John McCain in some ways than with Pelosi or with Barack Obama in terms of their views of fiscal discipline, the importance of pay-as-you-go, et cetera, et cetera. And yet, I think it shows just the kind of sense that there's two sports teams. We started with a Super Bowl talk on the Hill, and, you know, even if you kind of have more ideologically in common with those guys, you don't go over, you're with your team. And the advent of Obama and the Pax Obama doesn't seem to have healed this. I mean,
yeah, that's because, to my opinion, that's because a lot of liberals are acting as though Republicans are still in power. I mean, you know,
how do you mean?
Not only are, well, if you take the Frank Rich column that you mentioned today, he spends 1,500 words lambasting the Republicans, which is exactly what he's done for 8 years. The Republicans are not in power. They haven't even filibustered the bill. I think it'd be wrong for the Republican senators to try to filibuster this bill. Nonetheless, they haven't. All they did in a democracy was register their opinion against this current form of the House stimulus package, which Barack Obama did not write. David Obey wrote it. And David Obey has his own set of priorities, his own agenda, which it is not surprising to me that Republicans or even some Blue Dog Democrats would disagree with. So you have 1,500 words just screaming that some are Herbert Hoover Republicans. But not only is it completely appropriate, and it was completely appropriate during the Bush era and during when the Republicans ran Congress for the Democrats to oppose various types of legislation. So it's completely appropriate to me that the Republicans would oppose something that they disagree with. But it's also, it doesn't matter if they oppose it or not. The bill is going to get passed because their Democrats are not only in power, they have a lot of power. They have the presidency. They have both houses of Congress. They may have a 60th seat. We'll see what happens with Judge Gregg leaving, and whether they appoint a Republican, as it looks like there's some deal being made to appoint a Republican or not. So, regardless, though, even with the kind of the moderate Republicans that are part of that caucus from New England, the two ladies from Maine, for example, you don't have a filibuster. You know, it'd be hard to sustain a filibuster. But there's been no talk of that anyway. So I think actually it would behoove Frank Rich to kind of take a step back and just pretend the Republicans aren't there because they don't matter. And that's the end of that. I mean, I think your points about the Blue Dogs are very interesting because they are going to be more important going forward. Republicans don't matter anymore. Leave them alone. Let them do their thing. You know, they're fine.
Oh, poor guys. They're feeling hit.
Leave them alone. I'll tell you, there was a big sense of relief when Barack Obama was president because you heard from Republicans all over, at least, my Republican friends, not our problem anymore.
But look, Matt, I mean, this is not just a bill like the highway bill in 2003 that, you know, it's legit for the Democrats to oppose, et cetera. This is, people make comparisons between this and like the post 9/11 bill. It's an emergency bill. Mm-hmm. It's an emergency situation, big bill like Patriot Act or like the war resolution or something. And there was, if you can remember back, cast your memory back, a lot of a kind of sense of righteous disappointment and shock that Democrats wouldn't rally in unity and support that emergency bill when Republicans were in power, and there was criticism of Democrats, even though...
Which bill? The post 9/11 stimulus bill?
No, I'm thinking more of like Patriot Act or the...
But there was plenty of Democratic support for the Patriot Act, so...
Right. Yeah, but I'm just saying, yeah. You can't... It's an emergency bill. It's not like any random bill that, you know... But on the other hand, you know, okay, you're right. And I think that's true that... I think that's a really good point, that there is still by, you know, people like Gene Robinson or Frank Rich, a lot of whose columns I like, but... a sort of fixation on Republicans and an outrage. And it's like, dude, it's done. That, you know, the curtain is down. and I thought actually Obama was funny on that. You know, some people were a little offended, some Republicans, but when he went and he talked to the House Republicans, you know, was talking about, like, compromises he would make, and at a certain point he was like, I won. You know?
Right.
Sorry. And
it was appropriate for him to say that. I thought that's fine.
He also said, I remember he told Rep Dave Camp, who was saying, you know, kind of saying, oh, I'm angry about your bill. I have these various objections, and we didn't get left into the process. The Democrats wrote it without us. We're upset. And, you know, he very amiably, because he's a sort of amiable guy, doesn't get angry. He's a liberal who does not get angry.
That's true.
But he said, well, thank you for your thoughts. I'll watch you on Fox News and I'll feel bad about myself. And that, you know, I mean, that was the upshot of, like, what influence this guy had. He can go on Fox News and, you know, but I think Obama's not going to feel bad about himself thanks to Rep. Dave Camp, Republican of whatever state.
You know, you bring something, actually, that cutting remark brings up something I'd like to close on. But let me just say in response... I think the difference, I think it's an interesting parallel you draw between the post 9/11 legislation and the now this economic stimulus legislation. And it's true, if there was this uniform sense of national emergency, then it would be ridiculous for the Republicans to oppose the bill in the manner that they have. And we haven't got into this, but I think their alternative is flawed as well. I think it's stupid, and I think that there's another way that they could go about this and actually kind of regain some of their appeal to the country. Nonetheless, that's another story I write about in the Weekly Standard this week. But what's missing, why the parallel doesn't quite hold up is, I'm not sure whether it's a good thing that the parallel isn't holding up between post 9/11 and right now. Because it is a genuine global economic downturn related to huge global imbalances, and, you know, it's a big trouble. Let's put it that way. The global economy is in some big trouble.
Right.
But there isn't that sense of emergency, I think.
I agree.
And maybe that's a failure of political education, you know, in terms of opinion leaders communicating to the American people or not. But there isn't that sense, and what compounds it even more, and which gives the Republicans reason to vote against this bill, is I don't even think the Democrats have a sense of political emergency. Because if they had a political, if they did have that sense, they would have written a bill that was quick, that was huge, and that focused on a hard power. That's how I put it. Building more bridges. The things that people like, they like to, you know, everyone uses that cliche of the shovels, you know, shovel-ready projects. Americans support that. Instead, what they did was they decided to use this moment under cover of emergency language to impose a domestic agenda that they've been wanting to use, you know, that they've been waiting to legislate for 8 years. But there's no reason that you can't do an actual stimulus package and then just debate the political agenda of the Democratic Party, which they have every reason to pursue, having won the past two elections and now controlling all the, you know, the two elected branches of government. So that's the problem, and that's why I think we've kind of just fallen back into this the partisan, you know, debates and stuff. And of course, you know what? We'd be out of jobs if we didn't have partisan debates. Life wouldn't be that much fun if there wasn't disagreement, and we probably wouldn't even be living in a democracy, because politics is about disagreement. So It's fine. I will say this though. Eric Cantor was wrong not to say that he. I don't know the exact quote, but if he didn't explicitly say, "Yeah, I do want things to get better," and if the I want the president to succeed in making the economy better, he was wrong to do that. The reason he didn't do it, it seems to me. I don't know what the actual reasons. I would surmise that it's because of this ridiculous Republican fear of Rush Limbaugh. We saw, Phil Ranji this week, calling back.
The humiliation of Phil Gingrich.
Actually, saying something to Politico's Jonathan Martin that was mildly critical of Limbaugh, and then issuing a complete retraction and calling on Martin to apologize and say that the quote was horrible, or just a few hours later. And that's a big problem for the Republican Party if they are enthralled to Rush Limbaugh, who is an entertainer, and who has a following, but he's not an elected official, he's not in charge of the Republican Party by any means, and so it's wrong for the Republicans to be afraid of him, I think.
I totally agree. He's popular, and maybe the Republicans feel like, people like to listen to him.
Well, so. He's popular with people but, who like to call up their offices, and there is a general populist conservatism that just hates the government, doesn't want the government to do anything, wants the government to get away and shrink and just, of course, there's a famous story about the old lady who goes to the Republican politician and says, "Don't let the government get its hands on my Medicare." But that's that same mentality that the government's always flawed and can't do anything wrong. And there is some truth to that. A lot of government projects don't work out, as intended. However, it's taken to the extreme in today's Republican Party, and it hurts it. I want to end on this, though, which I'm sure is going to be very controversial. That comment you made about Obama brought to mind to me, Obama has a pretty cutting wit. I'm not even sure if it's a wit, actually. He's very cutting. If you recall during the famous Iowa debate in December 2007, when it was his line about Hillary, you're likable enough.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Imprinted on the public consciousness, I remember,
So the likable enough line, and then this one about, I'll watch you on Fox News, as him, basically the implication there is, go back to your conservative, hole, and I gotta go on with my governing the country. And then, and this is really, important to a lot of people, I don't know if you're aware of what he told Matt Lauer in the interview that was aired pre-Super Bowl yesterday. But Matt Lauer held up the cover of Us Weekly, which featured pictures of Michelle Obama and Sasha and Malia, but no Barack. And the president wasn't on there. And Matt Lauer said, "Well, they cut you out." And Obama said, it was quite amazing, actually, that he said this. He said, "Yeah, well, they replaced me with a photo of Jessica Simpson, who is looks like she's losing a weight battle, apparently." And so it's a little bit odd for me, again, this cutting sense that the President of the United States is commenting on Jessica Simpson's weight control issues. It's something, actually, we saw earlier this week where he went out of his way to say, Washingtonians don't know how to deal with snow, which is absolutely true, being a native Washingtonian.
That's true, right.
The area goes crazy. It's absolutely true. But there's this sense, and I don't know, I'd like to hear your take on it to close, because I don't really know what to make of it. To me, it suggests, and I know it's only 2 weeks, but I'm not sure, and this gets into, what I was saying earlier about the role of the executive and whatever.
Right.
I'm not sure Obama realizes he's president. I'm not sure it's sunk in. I mean, there's a certain ceremonial nature. You're not only the head of government, you're the head of state when you're the president, and our system is unusual in that. You want to kind of be removed, I think, from kind of the ephemera of American life. And you can even say, Obama, the fact that Obama needs his BlackBerry, and we have this huge national, not a huge national controversy, but we have a MIDI controversy about whether he should have his BlackBerry. And, not having it is that more ceremonial image of the president, kind of removed from everything else and presiding above. It seems to me Obama is very much not rejecting that ideal of the presidency and instead commenting on covers of Us Weekly magazines in a very biting way. I don't know. What's your take on that aspect of his personality?
I didn't hear about the Jessica Simpson. I think it's an interesting. I mean, he does have this. He's very cool. He's very controlled.
Right.
He doesn't seem to have you know, a temper, at least in terms of political negotiations, which is a great thing. He
Absolutely.
Does have a sort of irritable side mm-hmm. where he can be just a little provoked and I think mm-hmm. have this, like, slightly kind of, yeah, cutting, irritable wit. I mean, the Jessica Simpson thing, if he commented about her weight, that's terrible. She looks great, man. You know, as a woman, I gotta say, you know, she's rocking those tight leather pants with the curves. I think she's looking great. It's ridiculous. But, on the other hand, you know, he is trying to, I think, retain, not become totally ceremonial. And you're saying yeah. that you dislike that you like him to have more dignity. And that's something, actually, I remember my mother, who's quite conservative, always talking a lot, and this was during the Clinton years, and there was a lot to talk about regarding dignity and the lack thereof that he brought to the office. But she talked a lot about that quality of kind of gravitas and removal from...
Well, I think he does have gravitas. I'm not, you know, I don't want to go and say that he's completely, you know, just kind of talking, you know, he's playing Xbox and listening to music and, you know, he does have that. It's just always striking to me that he would say, and it's in the transcript. I mean, you can see the transcript of the interview where he says that, and it's like, whoa, you know, you know, you're the president.
Dad.
Why are you talking about this? I don't know.
Serious, man. I mean, yeah, that's terrible. But on the other hand, you know, I will say, I don't know that I would mind if I knew that he played a little Wii with his daughters or, you know, if I see
right.
him that he goes out and he's playing basketball or if he, you know, I would love if he got out in D.C. a little bit more, maybe to watch a movie or go up to eat at Busboys and Poets, the kind of unofficial social headquarters of Obama in D.C.
But that's too lefty. If he needs to find a nice bipartisan
Ben's
place, to go to CPK or something.
Yeah, yeah. But I would just say to end, this weekend I took a visit to the Lincoln Cottage, which I would recommend. We're coming up on a big anniversary of Lincoln's birth, I believe, and the cottage has been reopened, and this was his summer home. And this tour is fascinating. I would recommend this. The cottage is beautiful. The tour gives such a sense, and you really feel Lincoln's presence in this vacation home, which is now in the center of Washington, but then it was 3 miles out of the city. And he vacationed, actually, on a military hospital grounds. And, you know, there were soldiers in tents all around him, and he could visit wounded soldiers. And, you know, it was a really intense way, if you think about the difference between that and Crawford or Hawaii. But he was so accessible. And they told an amazing story of a British visitor, you know, some guy, just a British citizen, who came to the U.S. during the war, like in 1863 or 64, and decided that, you know, he wanted to see Niagara Falls, and he wanted to meet Abraham Lincoln. Like, imagine, you know, just a citizen coming. And so he followed Lincoln to the soldier's home, and he just knocked on the door. Lincoln was already in bed. His butler went up to get him, and this guy ended up sitting in the sitting room of this cottage, just talking with Lincoln, him and his buddies, for over an hour. And they just kind of shot the shit about, you know, the cartoons of the day and the games and different political issues. But he was so kind of his time and a person with the habits of his time and kind of not that formal and not removed and he did not have this ceremonial element. I was amazed to learn that he did this commute, which is 3 miles, almost every day because he would work at the White House during the day and sleep out there at night alone without any escort on a horse. And people would just wave to him and he would kind of chat with them. And you know, I just think for an American president, it's something that's unique about America, that they can kind of be more of their time, and they don't have to take on, they don't have to wear, like, wigs in order to have a debate, and they don't have to kind of take on these ceremonial, they don't have a huge old title, they don't have a costume in which they have to go before the people that's archaic, you know. They're of their moment, and if that means that Obama uses a BlackBerry and knows who Jessica Simpson is. I regret that he commented on her weight. In particular, I wish that he had said that she was looking banging, you know. But I love that. So I think, you know, I don't know if that's kind of difference between, sometimes between liberals and conservatives, because I noticed right. that, you know, there is sometimes a conservative wish for the president to have a lot of dignity and to be have this sort of removed quality. And I frankly think maybe it's a bit of your imperial wishes, and I would advise you, as a lover of the founders and of Washington, who rejected yes. title, and of yes. Of kind of the old foundational values of America, that you know, the president is just a man, and he's kind of a guy of his times.
This is true. And I think that's you're very right. And, of course, the country is very different than the one that Abraham Lincoln inhabited. A very different
that's
place.
True.
And a very different Washington. And, you know,
so different.
There'd be no way that the Secret Service would let any contemporary occupant of the Oval Office go out, you know, on a car ride or let alone a horse ride by himself without any protection.
Yeah,
it's a lesson in our changing circumstances. But I do think you're right. The president is just a man, or one day just a woman. So let's end on that part of, you know, kind of reflective bipartisan comedy. And and we'll say until next time, Eve, it was great talking to
Always
you.
Always a pleasure to talk with you, Matt.
Okay, take care.
You too.